Hello, you're listening to Spoiler
Filled
Film
Conversation.
Hooray!
Ooh, made it all the way up to 66%.
Do you have an actual
75%.
What are you measuring the percent of?
How many of us cheer?
Right.
But not the enthusiasm, per
no,
se.
No. Just the actual sound created.
I look forward to seeing the charts. So, I'm Richard Nicholas, hello. With me for a chat about a film is Anthony Evans,
How do you do?
Jamie Thomas,
Hello.
and Abigail Bain.
Hi there.
So, guys, the film that we watched this week and are now going to have a nice chat about was Harlem Nights. Nights or Night?
Nights.
Good. Whose pick was it?
It was mine.
So, will you please give some details of the film, please?
Okay. Harlem Nights is a 1989 comedy drama crime film starring Eddie Murphy and Richard Pryor. The film also featured Michael Lerner, Danny Aiello, Red Fox in his last film before his death in 1991.
Is that his full name?
Red Fox.
You just made it sound like that was his whole name.
It is.
It is.
No, that he died in Bubba.
Oh, yeah, it is. Della Reese and Murphy's brother Charlie Murphy. Murphy and Pryor star as a team running a nightclub in the late 1930s Harlem, New York, while contending with gangsters and corrupt police officials. It was directed by Eddie Murphy as well as written by him. And it was his only foray into directing.
Yeah. Abby, I think you had a comment about how much Eddie Murphy had to do with this.
There's a sort of courtesy in credits usually where if one person has done a lot of different things, they try and conflate it down. So it might say written, produced, and directed by this person. But instead, they elected to put Eddie Murphy's name five times in the
Just.
credits.
Which is really weird because I'm jumping ahead a bit, but this film had the most boring opening credits ever,
Didn't it
and if
just?
anything needed to be shortened, it was that.
Yes.
It was just baffling how they went with, I know what we'll have as the dynamic opener, just a photograph of some velvet. Just, and then the music to sort of say, contextualize the time period, but it was just. And made by Eddie Murphy, starring Eddie Murphy, directed by Eddie Murphy, written by Eddie Murphy.
If ever, like, there was a warning bell going off that was shouting Vanity Project at the viewer, it was the opening credits of this film.
And weirdly, in his other films where he plays multiple characters, you'd expect maybe every character to be listed as Eddie Murphy, but he's only in it once. It's not him multiple times.
That's actually, I didn't think about that when I was watching it, but no, you're right. Like, all the other films where, he's being directed by somebody else, where he appears as a menagerie of characters, and yet in the film that he directed himself, he doesn't do it.
Yeah, but he if he'd have, it could have been a funny joke if it had been and starring Eddie Murphy, Eddie Murphy, Eddie Murphy, and Eddie Murphy. But no, this time we have to be emphasized that it's his thing. He did this, and he's in it.
And this was like 89, so this was peak Eddie Murphy. Like, the 80s belonged, he was one of those stars who like owned the 80s.
Yeah,
Yeah,
he
he
was one
was.
of the biggest stand-ups in America. And then
Yeah,
off
and
the
he had
back
a.
of that launched a comedy film career, which
Yeah,
and
and
he
he
has
had a
quite some
streak
good
of.
ones in there.
Yeah, there's some. He was in some great films in the 80s and, Coming to America, Beverly Hills Cop,
48 Hours.
48 Hours, and just. He was young, too. Like, he was only in his 20s, his early 20s when he did Delirious, which was his big stand-up, his first big stand-up show. And he'd already made a huge impact on Saturday Night Live and everything, and
So this is a good, interesting starting point. Is that we should talk about our expectations in relation to
yeah.
how we feel about Eddie Murphy, going into this, I think. I mean, you're a fan, Jamie, right? That's why you like this.
Yeah, I mean, for all his faults, yeah. When I think when he was, or still sometimes is, occasionally good, he's great. Like, he's just a very good comic actor, and he's not a terrible like dramatic actor either. The comedy's like his thing, but he's always come across to me like he has an ego, like, he doesn't want to be known as a comedian or a comedy actor. He wants to be a star. And he needs, like, he's not like Jack Black, who's, like, embraced the fact that, for the most part, he's a comedian more than anything else.
Right. Well, I think Eddie Murphy's got a lot of talent to back up his star status.
Yeah, Eddie Murphy's, like, he's always seemed like he wants to do everything. And, like, comedy, drama, music, and the best thing he does is comedy, I think. And then he had this weird period in the 90s where he decided he was going to become a family-friendly star.
Yeah.
And except, like, he wasn't at all family-friendly.
Yeah, and like, that's the other thing as well. Like, I really like his stand-up, but there are certain things you have to get past with his stand-up, like his massive homophobia.
His clothes, I think, is another barrier.
Well, yeah. Yeah, it's just, but again, a lot of that is product of his background and his time and all that kind of stuff. It's the kind of stuff that you can think, well, okay, fine.
I think there's a difference in that some of his material is sort of risky rather than deliberately saying I'm this or I'm that. It tackles topics, and there are probably bits of misogyny or homophobia.
Yeah.
But I think it comes with the territory of being a say-what-you-want comedian. So I think there's...
I think a lot of it as well is the somewhat arrogance of a guy in his early 20s who's one of the biggest stars in the world.
Yeah.
You know, it kind of comes with that sort of territory. And he did, like, in the 90s, I think he did some interview where he apologized for all that kind of stuff that he'd said back in his, like, early comedy career. But, yeah, he I don't know what he did in the 90s then. He did, like, all this stuff, like, Dr. Doolittle, and that wasn't, like, horrendous. It was a decent enough family film, and The First Nutty Professor. But then he started to do just awful, awful stuff.
Sure, he's definitely remembered more fondly for his stand-up and in the 80s, his films.
Although I do always defend the PJs. I thought that was a really good show, and I will stand by that forever.
That's a good show, I agree. So it's a funny animated show.
It was one of the last, you know, good things he's done, and he's always defending it as well. So
I'm not familiar with it. What is it?
It was not claymation, but kind of claymation sitcom in the late 90s, I think 98, 99 it started. Yeah. And it's set in, the PJs is the project, so it's set in like a not a slum, but like the American equivalent of a council flat. Mm. And Eddie Murphy plays Thurgood Stubbs, who's the superintendent, the chief superintendent of the building. And the characters are like people who live in the apartments above. And it's just, it got in a lot of trouble because it made a lot of, like, I don't want to call it racist, but like racially sensitive jokes. Like, it didn't hide that fact, and a lot of that I think came from Eddie Murphy, but a lot of people didn't like it. And then as it went on, I think Eddie Murphy dropped out because of the controversy, and someone else came in and took over, and it was very expensive to produce, and it just kind of, so there were only three series. But I just thought it was good. I thought it was a really kind of, It was very kind of tightly written. That's what I liked about it. It was one of those shows that was just like one joke after another.
One of the things I really liked about this, actually, was the dialogue between them was very snappy and very unnaturalistic. Exactly.
I've gone way off topic here, but the expectations. When I saw that this was Eddie Murphy, Richard Pryor and Red Fox, I mean, that's three generations of black comedians, of famous black comedians from the US. And, like, it's kind of common knowledge that Eddie Murphy idolized Richard Pryor.
Mm.
And I, from the trailer and just from knowing about those three comedians, I was expecting the film to be really heavy on the relationship between the three of them. And that kind of like snappy back and forth between the three of them. And then it happens about three times in the film.
Mm.
Like, that was one of the things that disappointed me the most, was I thought the focus of the film was going to be on their relationship. Particularly when, at the beginning, Richard Pryor's character, like, adopts the kid version of Eddie Murphy's character. So it's almost like a father, a, a son, a father, and a grandfather, which I thought was going to be the crux of the film, and it's just incidental for the most part.
Right. Good. Yes. Right. Yes. I feel like we've come a long way. We've kind of gone through a plotted history of the PJs and come out a bit talking about the film. But thanks, Jamie. That was good input. I have follow-ups to some of the stuff you said, but other people's expectations a bit. Abby, you were starting to say you thought the dialogue was snappy. What were you expecting for the film and stuff?
Well, I actually knew very little about it before we started. I just knew the three guys and that it was by them. And I guess I just sort of... Richard Pryor, I sort of hinged on, because I don't know that much about Red Fox. And I don't know that much about Eddie Murphy's comedy. I know more about his acting.
Yeah.
So I expected the sort of Richard Pryor-y ridiculousness, I guess. Because he's always cranked up in every film I've seen. He's just having a series of panic attacks, more or less.
Yeah, dilemmas. What about you, Anthony?
Well, I didn't really know what to expect. The only thing I really knew was like a plot outline and the cast. And from that, I thought it was going to be like an all-out comedy. I mean, you know, it usually is when Eddie Murphy's like helming it.
Yeah.
And it was a 1980s Eddie Murphy film, so there was still a possibility it could be really good.
Yeah.
But then on the other hand, like, Murphy is also directing and writing, and that makes it into a whole new ball game.
It does.
When coming into films.
It helps knowing that it's the only thing he directed as well. It's like, well, why didn't you continue off the back of this?
Yeah.
So it's very, very few have the aptitude to kind of fill all three major stations of the film.
Yeah.
I suppose I was expecting like a kind of all-out comedy, but I didn't know what to make of Eddie Murphy in like a period piece. So I was kind of interested in that, although I was kind of maybe expecting it wouldn't work so well.
Okay, so tapered expectations. Yeah, I mean, I really like Eddie Murphy. I think Richard Pryor is like one of the best stand-ups ever. I think sometimes he's a bit lost in translation in terms of it's the 70s when he worked his best and... Yeah. It's American culture and it's Black American culture. So that's a few steps removed from, you know, us and our generation and stuff. But
he's got his delivery and his way of telling a story is so universal that it's really hard not to like Richard Pryor.
Yeah. Red Fox, I'd only heard of, like, in terms of people like Chris Rock and Richard Pryor mentioning them, but not a great deal about him.
Sorry, just in case nobody knows, Red Fox, I think, was best known for...
Sanford and Sons?
Sanford and Sons. Which was, I didn't realise, was an American remake of Steptoe and Sons.
Yeah.
Yeah.
which seems bizarre. What,
of everything you're going to remake, why Steptoe and Sons?
But it's kind of, that's kind of cultly popular in America as well. So, you know. But yeah, I liked their stand-up. I think Eddie Murphy, like you, Jamie, his best work was in the 80s. And then he took a nosedive trying to make family films. And has done some really terrible projects. But, you know, they think he's talented. So there's no reason this was going to be definitely terrible. But I'd never heard of the film before you mentioned it. And he hasn't directed anything else since. So it sort of sets off a... Well, there must be a reason why he hasn't directed anything since. And there must be a reason that it's only probably played on, like, the Paramount Comedy Channel when that was a thing. Like, it's that kind of, maybe we'll stick it on late night, but we won't make a big fuss about it kind of film. But I honestly didn't know what to expect. But I was interested. So, I mean, you know, there we go. Jamie, you started to talk about some of the things that you found... interesting, problematic, or whatever. Do you want to elaborate some more, and then we'll comment on what you have to say?
It's a really odd film because, like, everybody has said their expectations coming into this that it was going to be a comedy.
Yeah, not just a comedy, but like an all out comedy.
Yeah, and you'd expect you know, Richard Pryor being Richard Pryor and being on, you know, like he is in, like, Hear No Evil, See No Evil, or, you know, but he's everyone is very subdued.
I agree, that's like the word I was going to use, yeah, subdued.
Yeah, and Richard Pryor in particular, actually, and I don't know, this, apparently this was just after he'd got his diagnosis of, was it MS he had, multiple sclerosis?
And there was, I'm not sure.
There was, like, some people have speculated that that's the reason why he's quite subdued in this. But even Eddie Murphy, like there are scenes, and it does seem like this film, all the good stuff in this film, it's very, like, everything fun happens in the first sort of half an hour or so. And it sets you up to think, oh, yeah, this is going to be really good. Because there's, like, I like the opening scene in Sugar Ray's night, Richard Pryor's character's, like, dingy little gambling club that he starts out in.
Yeah, it's a strong opener. And it's an opener you'd expect more from a more run-of-the-mill crime film. Like, something to set up a drama about, I guess, Harlem gangsters in this case.
Yeah, and the dialogue's really great between all of them, and it sets up their relationships really well. And then, like, when it goes into, you know, it cuts forward to Quick, Eddie Murphy's character's an adult now, and they're running this, like, speakeasy in Harlem, and there's loads of stuff that works really well. There was a scene I liked, which was the fight between Vera, like, the madam.
Oh, yeah.
Looks after all the...
I loved her.
Yeah. that scene was... Like, that was the... And it was slapstick. Like, it was really broad,
comedy.
But
it's got such a mixed tone, though, because it's partly going for a crime gangster movie that's supposed to have you on edge a bit. And then it's also ridiculous slapstick. And it's kind of...
Yeah.
The weird tone flips thing to the other.
Another thing... Red Fox's character about him needing glasses. Yeah. And again, it's done in this kind of slapstick way where he's refusing to wear his glasses and he's calling the dice wrong all the time. So he gives up and puts them on and they magnify his eyes so they look huge. And, like, that's at the beginning of the film. And that's something that I was expecting to be... It was setting what I thought was going to be the tone for the whole thing.
Very gaggy and very broad... comedy, isn't it? What do you guys make of the opener, maybe, more than anything else?
I liked the opening, but it was kind of unexpected because it was, like you said, it's more of an opening for a crime or, like, maybe a gangster kind of thing. Yeah. So, like, and especially it comes, like, after the credits, which is a kind of, like, jazzy, kind of romantic kind of mood.
Yeah.
And then straight cut to, like, kid running down the street, and it's, like, all really happy and jovial and nice, and then, you know, cut to dingy bar, and it's like, oh, it's quite serious, and so it's kind of odd. And when the jump happened, I found it hard to think of Eddie Murphy as that kid, because it's like the opening seemed to be implying like oh, this is going to go into a gangster kind of story, and it's going to focus on this kid who's going to be like a sociopath.
Yeah, and at first, when you go, oh, okay, 10 years later, now he's Eddie Murphy, and the club's much nicer, and it's much more successful, and he's a bit of a player, you're like, oh, I see. This kid has grown up and become a proper gangster, and it's going to be, you know, an awkward position where he's intimidating people, and he's, you know, it's the classic gangster growing up story where you enjoy the lifestyle, and you're too young and headstrong, and you ruin it. And it wasn't really that by the end, was it?
No. And, like, the opening kind of mixed all the elements up really nicely. Like, it had the comedy, it had the drama, and the kind of surprise.
Yeah.
But then, as soon as it cut to, like, 20 years later, like, the comedy became very slapsticky.
It's...
And very improvised.
I think this film's another classic example of film bin picks where the tone is all over the place.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Because, like, the comedy scenes that I'm remembering from the film stand out so much because they're so different from everything else.
Yeah. Abby, where do you weigh in on this?
When it was funny, it was really funny. But then there were other times when people were getting shot a lot, and it was a bit, oh, this isn't funny now, is it?
It is odd as well, because as the film progresses, you get the idea that, okay, Richard Pryor and Eddie Murphy are essentially playing good characters. They're gangsters, but we're rooting for them because they're kind of being cheated out of their own crime enterprise and bullied out of it. And then they're not really killing people until they start blowing people up at the end. And it's like, hang on, you were the nice guys.
It feels kind of cheap. One of the ways of making them sympathetic is by having Danny Aiello's crooked cop come in and just start calling them racist names.
Yeah.
As a way for the audience to think, oh, these poor guys. Look at like, that seemed really cheap to me. Like, like you can't make them sympathetic genuinely, so you just throw like N-words at them from other characters to make it seem like they're persecuted. Like, they obviously would have been, at the time in 1930s Harlem, they would have been up for awful treatment.
Yeah.
But it feels like it was being used.
It was odd how they tried to play it like, these are the good guys, but at the same time, they're gangsters. We know Eddie Murphy, as a child, murdered a guy. Admittedly, a kind of, tooth-missing guy who was all cross and going to stab Richard Pryor, potentially. But still, the guy's a criminal, and they've made money through illegal, like, nightclub owning, gambling, prostitution, Like, these aren't good guys. They're just, we like them. because they're the main characters and they're nice and funny.
It seems like very much these are the good guys because they just are.
Yeah, because...
Because
the other criminal is more mean and nasty about it.
Yeah.
Which is odd. I mean, it's not attack a gangster film would take. It would be about the survival of these guys and a vendetta and a feud, not, oh, we're the good guys who have to win and somehow rob the... It was like a heist movie in a sense, wasn't it? It was like The Sting or something, where it was more, I didn't realise you were setting up for a, we're going to rob the bad guy and get away with it because he tried to bully us out of our turf. That's a bit of a weird idea to finish on, considering you set up kind of a dark and funny tone.
I wouldn't be surprised. I haven't seen it anywhere in researching it, but I wouldn't be surprised if this is one of those rare films that was shot in sequence, because as the film goes on, it seems like everyone involved in it is getting more and more bored and disinterested as it moves towards the conclusion.
I don't know. I don't know if I'd speculate on that, but it does at times feel like the laughs are going and it's more about the tension, and it doesn't really work, because just as you think it's going to get tense and the comedy's not the focus anymore, it throws in ridiculous gags like the gangster who is crying while he's trying to get revenge on Eddie Murphy.
Which is Arsenio Hall, this is the only other film he did with Eddie Murphy, because the other one was Coming to America. Yeah. But, that scene by itself was quite funny, but did not belong in this film at that point.
It was so over the top and insane, and he did such a hammy, ridiculous job of laughing. Not like crying and being cross, and then accidentally killing someone in the car with him. It was stupid and ridiculous. Abby, I think you particularly were laughing at that moment.
I think it's because, ridiculous as it was, I think it's more likely that a man would be weeping because his brother is dead and freaking out and wanting to kill him than it is for him to be a stone-faced killer.
Yeah.
Like it happens in other movies. So it was really funny, but it was also kind of correct as well.
Yeah.
It was fun and ridiculous and satirical, but it felt like the film wasn't always a satire, so it was a bit, okay, this bit's funny. And like you mentioned the bit where Eddie Murphy kind of establishes his character a bit by jokingly starting a fight with the woman in charge of the prostitutes. And Vera.
That's my favourite fight ever.
Yeah. Do you know what's amazing about that character? Is that the woman who plays her is called, I think, Della Reese or something.
Della Reese,
she is most famous for Touched by an Angel, which is like a long-running series about, like, it's kind of a Christian TV series about angels helping out in people's lives. And it's like, her throwing in the like mother F this and like like blind that, like, just like, it's hard to quote her because there's so much swearing, but like she's just full of the obscenities and is this like kind of funny, like strong character that's willing to fight Eddie Murphy, and it's just how could you be the woman from Touched by an Angel?
I think Della Reese and Red Fox and Danny Aiello are the only members of the cast who like really give it anything as throughout the whole film. Like, they're the only ones whose performances remain consistent as the film goes on. Like, Richard Pryor seems really preoccupied, and Eddie Murphy just... Eddie Murphy just seems bored with his own film. Like, he's just... He's kind of wandering around like,
he probably took too much on. Because there's a reason that people don't write, star, produce, and direct movies. The guy's probably exhausting.
Yeah.
Maybe he spread himself a bit thin. Maybe. But I thought there were still funny moments in it. Even Richard Pryor, who, you know, it's a more subdued character, but I thought he was, like, his general banter with the people he worked with was kind of funny. And the way he would, whenever they started sassing each other and having a go at each other, it seemed like being backstage at a comedy club a bit.
Those were the highlights of the film, and that was what I found myself wanting more of, as, like, all the scenes with just the three of them.
Yeah.
And I was like, why can't this film have more of this? Why all this, like, half-baked, kind of not really thought through gangster heists, whatever it was trying to be, stuff going on, where, like, important plot points almost felt like they were happening in the background when, there were a few times in this film where it was like I came to and suddenly everything had changed and I was going, wait, what's going on?
Yeah, it's odd as well, because with the character Eddie Murphy plays, Quick, he's the adopted son of Richard Pryor's Sugar Ray, who is this illegal club-owning guy. And their basic problem is that their turf is being muscled in on, and there's not a lot they can do about it. So there's the conflict of Richard Pryor wanting to shut up shop and move away, and Eddie Murphy being like, we got to face these guys and, you know, not back down. And there could have been, you know, that would have been a good idea for a crime drama, but instead they went, we'll get this guy with a heist.
And a really unnecessarily unclear thing about betting on a fight and getting a guy to throw the fight, but then he doesn't throw the fight and somebody has some money or something.
They confused the simple premise of, we'll rob his bookies and then we'll leave.
Yeah.
But they made it seem like, oh, but we'll also bet on the fighters to throw them off. Even though we're not going to fix the fight.
Yeah, it's
like,
and kill them anyway.
Yes.
This film kind of, it turns out to be both overly complicated and overly simplified at the same time, which is really odd.
It kind of mucks up telling us what it's doing, because I think we would have got it if it hadn't have gone, let's explain our plans. It's like, don't bother, we get it. That guy wants you to move out or pay him a lot, and you don't like it. So you're going to deal with it. I don't know. So there is a lot in there I liked, because the one thing I would say is me and Harvey did enjoy it as just a comedy because it was full of funny bits, and I wasn't worrying too much about whether or not it stood together as a whole, you know.
Yeah, I think the best part of the film for me was the characters.
Yeah,
definitely.
And they were all given just enough attention and were funny, and I think the improvisational, like, nature of what they were doing worked on the whole.
Yeah.
There were some moments where it was kind of distracting because they kind of fumble over their improvised lines. And it didn't quite fit into the kind of 1930s style they were going for.
Yeah, maybe.
But I think, we've said quite a bit about Murphy's directing, but I think he kind of shines a bit in directing people rather than the action and the story. Yeah.
That was the other problem I think I had with it, is that the directing style, as far as like visually, the film was very, very pedestrian. Like, the costume design was great.
Yeah, yeah. I think it got nominations for Academy Awards, if not winning some.
It got a nomination for Best Costume Design, but it also won a Golden Raspberry Award for worst screenplay and got nominated for worst director.
I think that's unfair.
I think that's a bit harsh.
I don't know. I mean, strip down all the good things about this film and like look at the screenplay, and it would be like, oh.
It felt like a first draft. Like, it felt like it hadn't been, like, polished particularly. And I think a lot of the reason it was nominated for Worst Director for a Razzie and Worst Screenplay partly is probably because of expectations.
Yeah, maybe. People are expecting Eddie Murphy to do... They know he's brilliant because they've seen him in Beverly Hills Cop and 48 Hours. Yeah. And they can't wait, and then they're let down because it's sort of a little bit... You know, it's someone's first... You know, directing, writing, debut, and performing. It's a lot to take on, and he fumbled it a bit. But I think it's harsh to say it was one of the worst films because
it was 1989. There must have been far worse films. But, like, I think had it been directed by an unknown and starred an unknown, it still wouldn't have gotten praise. It would have just been... It wouldn't have gotten a nomination for worst director.
It would have been acceptable. Been
forgotten about.
And it would have been a good. It would have been a good. Oh yeah, we get what you're doing. Now improve on that. If it had been an unknown director or something. Abby, you were going to leap to the defence of it. Let's hear some of your positives.
Well, I just think it is a bit harsh to say that it's the worst film. Against there must be worse films than this. Like the screenplay wasn't amazing. I'll give you that. But the worst of 1989. Really?
It was funny. Like, it was funny. Like, it had that. I mean, the story was silly, but you can kind of understand it from a... It's almost a sort of family film at times. I mean, it's full of swearing and death, but it is actually quite a family film. It's almost like you could have lost some of the edginess and gone for a more Bugsy Malone type story. Yeah. Maybe it could have worked as a family film more and been not real trying, because it sometimes felt realistic. Other than, you know, at times it felt very like a set. Like they had a nice looking set, but it didn't feel like you were in Harlem very much. It didn't capture the atmosphere of it.
And even when they were, it was such a small bit of the city that you don't really see anything. It felt like two streets.
Yeah, it all felt very inconsequential. Like, I never felt like Quick was in any kind of danger at any point.
No, and he is in a lot of danger, very deliberately. There's an odd few car scenes where he's, you know, being chased down and there's a few crashes, but it's a little bit pedestrian. And then, because it's a comedy, the fact that he's not in that much peril and there's a kind of banter and jokes going on in the scene where he's being... when people are trying to kill him, it's got no tension. It's just playing it for laughs. And it's a bit stupid and childish in a way that doesn't suit the gangster element of it at all.
It's just, it's not one or the other. It's not a proper gangster movie and it's not a proper comedy. It's just this, not lazy necessarily, but like not unfinished kind of mix up of the both.
Yeah.
And I don't know. And like, there's potential in there, in the story, but I think a reason why it was so disliked when it came out was people were expecting something fantastic. With the cast and, you know, Eddie Murphy's first go at directing, they were thinking, this is going to be great. And they probably were, we all were expecting a full-on comedy.
Yeah, I still think it was just a comedy. I didn't think it got boring at times. It kept me interested, and I was laughing along with it, and I kind of just got it. And I think my expectations were low because we're not in the height of Eddie Murphy's career. I wasn't expecting a lot from it, and then it delivered sort of mild laughs and a bit of slapstick and funny characters and stuff. So it kept, and then the story was interesting enough, if a little stupid. Like, I'd kind of like to talk a bit about their bad guy, which was, what's the name of the main gangster who was trying to bully them out of everything?
Bugsy Calhoun, played by Michael Lerner.
The casting in this film is really good. Like I said, that kind of goes with like the characters being really good. So all the casting is really good. However, we are introduced to Bugsy Calhoun playing a chess game.
Yeah.
And torturing his minions.
I was going to say a different faux pas. Actually,
yeah.
That in scripts, it's encouraged for you to give people distinct names. And the fact that one was called Calhoun and the other one is called Cantone,
yeah,
annoyed me.
Bit confusing, yep. I guess.
I had a couple of times in this film where I wasn't sure who was who.
They also reference gangsters who hadn't been in it much, as if they were important.
Yeah.
And it's like, we haven't established them very much. They don't know who you're on about. Oh, but you're going to kill one of them? Who's that again?
Yeah.
Like, why does that relate to, like, Sugar Ray or whatever?
Like, I only realised who Tommy Smalls was when he was
dead.
Murdered.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, me too. Who's a funny laugh, though? When he turns up and he's just got this stupid laugh. I thought it was just a funny thing to do. And a lot of the time, the side characters were just a kind of one gag idea, but it was so sort of ridiculous and over the top, it usually worked. Like you say, they introduce this main villain guy, and it's not a particularly interesting guy. He's just sort of, you know, dislikable because he's a bit mean, really. Although they did have that guy who's in Due South. You and Ollie do. Due South commentary, so...
Oh, Ray from Due South! I forgot about him.
I thought I recognised him.
Do you have anything to add, or do you want to just plug the Due South commentary, seeing as he's in this?
I would love to plug the Due South commentaries, and I would say, while his part was small, he did it quite well.
I expected there more to happen with him, because the way he's introduced is like, oh, you've let me down, and it's your fault, so I'm going to, like, smash your hand in this piano. And I thought he'd play a bigger role in the story, and then not really. Like, they just kind of forgot about him and had him there with his broken hand.
Yeah.
You know, weird. It's like the other main villain, I guess, was the detective guy.
See, I think he's a much more interesting villain than Bugsy Calhoun.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree.
And I like Danny Aiello anyway. I think the first thing I saw him in was Jacob's Ladder.
Sure.
As the chiropractor. It's so weird to see him as a villain because I saw him in that first. That's who he is to me.
Sure,
he's this like benevolent, like kindly advice giving, basically angel, which is what he is in Jacob's Ladder. And I find it so hard not to think of it. Like the whole time when he started like dropping N bombs and stuff in this, I was like, Danny Aiello, you don't say stuff like that.
Well, we've got two people. We've got two people famous for playing angels, suddenly being full of swears and being sassy and kind of aggressive.
But he's been negative characters in other things. Yeah. He was in Once Upon a Time in America, where he confusingly plays a policeman whose last name is Aiello.
Yeah,
but he was really good. Like, even though I have a hard time not seeing him as his character from Jacob's Ladder, I thought he was convincingly, like, corrupt in this.
Yeah.
And also, like, watchable, really watchable, right through, right to the end. Like, he didn't seem like he lost interest.
He's playing a kind of typical noirish corrupt cop that you get in, like, kind of 1940s films and stuff. But it works because he's confident and, you know, he's got race problems with these guys and...
Yeah.
He's, you know, he's their main problem, and he's working for the big main criminal. So there's, you know, an interesting story there. But what annoyed me as well is they killed the main bad guy, but they only decided to, like, they kind of trapped this guy in a safe and he had the potential to die, but they didn't actually kill him. Whereas they're willing to blow up, like, their rival gang and all of the men that turned up, you know. It seemed ridiculous that they wanted to explode one guy and just, you know, let a guy have an uncomfortable couple of nights until he's saved. You know? It seemed really unjust.
Yeah, especially as he was the one actually doing things and being on screen and being intimidating.
Mm. They really, like, let their own characters off the hook. Normally, a crime film, at some point, will punish the protagonists for being criminals. There's an element of, well, you may win overall, but you're going to have to suffer some losses. And they don't, in any way.
Yeah.
I will say, right at the beginning of the film, once it was clear where the story was going, I was convinced that Richard Pryor had to die at some point. he just had to, and then, like, that would set off Eddie Murphy to, like, finish the film. But it didn't come.
No.
And I was really surprised by that.
It's odd. It's almost like our own gangster film literacy got in the way of us having a more family-friendly romp of sweary madness.
Yeah, they pretty much just get away scot-free at the end.
It's like, it's really weird. And it doesn't sit right because you're like, they're still criminals. We're not criminals. And, you know, they were just, you know, they're sympathetic, but they're not guilt-free of crime. They murdered people. They didn't really deserve to get away with it. But, you know, I think one of the other interesting story areas that was just seemed like it was just going to be one part of the heist, but it actually got a bit more compelling, was one of the prostitutes is sent to seduce one of the delivery guys for the money from the betting shop that they're robbing to get revenge. And she has to manipulate that guy and just sleep with him and convince and kind of and get him to fall in love with her so that he'll slip up and allow them to steal the money, isn't it? That's the general idea.
Yes.
Yeah.
But I thought that she was quite, like, once they introduced her, I found her quite interesting. And she had like, I mean, she's very attractive and very, she seems so sweet and nice. And you kind of go, yeah, I'd fall in love with her too, guy. And it's kind of an interesting dynamic that she has in that bit of the story with the delivery guy.
It led to one of the moments that made me laugh, where he phones his wife and just tells her in like one sentence that he just says, "Hey, never coming back no more," and then just hangs up, and then kind of sits there in his pants and goes, "Yeah, yeah."
But it was so ridiculous and over the top the way she sits there and disregards some guy she's with and is sort of licking her lips and looking at her. And then all of him and his mate are like, "I think she's looking at you, guy. I think she's looking at you. Yeah, do you think she's after us all? No, I don't know. Oh, she's coming over. Oh, she's bought you a drink. Hi." And she's just so flirty and over the top. It was so funny. It's ridiculous. And then kind of sweet then, because she's ultimately betraying him and you kind of feel sorry for him because he's left his wife. But at the same time, you slept with a woman who wasn't your wife. Shame on you. Mm. Did anyone else think that was a good bit of the story that could have, you know, she could have made a bigger part. She's not even in the last end bit to say, "Hooray, we all got our money and got out of here."
Yeah, what happened to all the prostitutes, actually?
They just moved out of Harlem and set up shop elsewhere and lived happily ever gangster.
Well, I think the only people who were in danger were the people who were running the casino. So everyone else, it's like, well, we could kill them, but what difference would it make in the long run, I suppose?
What's weird as well is that the police, towards the end, bust the club and sling pretty much everyone in jail, which is kind of weird. They sling everyone in the club in jail, and then Richard Pryor pays the princely sum of like $500 or whatever it is.
Oh no, it was something like $7,500. Yeah,
I guess back then, bigger deal, and just buys them all out and sends them away in limos and gives them chocolate or whatever. Like, and that was kind of, well, why was that there? I mean, I get it, you needed to help your people out, but it didn't fit in with the heist. It wasn't that relevant. It was almost just like a little mini, showed you, didn't I? You evil boss.
It's just, I don't know. Like, again, it's like this film was brainstormed rather than written.
Yeah, like a lot of ideas. Let's sling them all together. How do we make this work? Oh, it's a heist as well. Why not?
Yeah.
And the heist was quite a dumb plan because it hinged mainly on, so we get one prostitute to convince a guy to pick her up. Then we dress up as cops. Then we also get white guys to dress up as cops. So we throw off anyone who might be watching us. It just so happened someone was watching us. Ooh, good plan. Like, it's one of those stupid
It hinged on a bunch of, like, coincidences and what ifs.
We get two cop cars. We get four cop uniforms. And we just take some money off a guy and arrest him for crashing. And then we take the money off ourselves as cops. And then we just tell people to go places so we can trap them. Like, we lead a guy to a bank vault and trap him in there. And we also tell the guy where we're supposed to be so that he turns up and we blow him up.
That's a pretty neat summing up of the plan.
We'll just send the sassy prostitute woman. We'll send Della Reese to go and talk to the crime boss guy. And she'll just go, "I guess I'll grass him in even though I'm scared." And then
I don't know if she actually got to the point where she grassed them in.
Well, she just,
seemed to walk in and go, I didn't want to do it. I didn't want to do it at any point. I didn't want to do any of this. I didn't want to do it. It's like, but
yeah, all right.
I wasn't sure if he knew who she was to begin with.
But then she says where he's hiding, and instead of checking it out and seeing if she's right or if she's like a traitor or whatever, because what I would have done in that was like, okay, if you're telling the truth and you're not just, you know, leading us the wrong way, we'll pay you and we'll take care of you, but you stay with us, and basically she'd get blown up too, because you'd keep hold of her until they find Sugar Ray and Quick and all that. It just seemed like a really tenuous, ridiculous plan.
They were very trusting gangsters, it seemed.
Yeah, they were, and that was their downfall. So they explode. They also have a weird couple of back... Like, they have traditional gangster film stuff where, okay, now that he's got all his people out of jail, we'll burn the club down so it's permanently ruined. Oh yeah, burn our club down, we'll fire some shots in your club and then explode that club. How would you like that? Yeah. And it was like, well, that had nothing to do with anything. And it had some gangsters in it that made a brief appearance. And it had some characters in it that made a brief appearance, but we didn't really get to know. Just really disjointed bits that didn't quite... I didn't understand why they were there.
It's a mess, really.
But it was a funny mess, Jamie. I had a nice time watching it.
I got really bored.
It's your fault, Jimmy. You picked it.
I know. But, the moments of comedy were funny, but all the stuff in between, I didn't care. And by the time the film ended, I was just, oh, thank God. I just thought, you know what? I'm going to put on Delirious instead and watch that. Or the PJs.
So, I guess we can come to a wrapping up stage, unless you guys got other bits that you think we should have talked about. Oh, one character was the sort of femme fatale character that Eddie Murphy instantly fell in love with. In that way that, in a crime film, you fall in love with the boss's mistress, and you get in instant trouble and get people killed, because you're thinking with your downstairs parts. And they had that, and it was utterly pointless, and she was just an assassin, and it didn't go anywhere. And they didn't even do a ridiculous lovemaking scene. They sort of did it a bit. Eddie Murphy licks her face a bit. And then they cut away to the candles having burnt down overnight.
You reminded me of a bit that I wanted to talk about. I love the way he reacted to her little gun.
Yeah.
So wonderful.
That's that reaction to her tiny gun. That's what I wanted from the whole film.
Just loads of funny gag satirizing gangster films, yeah. And it was it was good, because he just finds the tiny gun and you think, oh, he's twigged that, you know, she's going to try and assassinate him. And then it's just like, oh, it's so cute, she's just like me. And it kind of catches you off guard. It was funny. It's a funny bit. And it works. And then, you know.
But then the whole sequence ends with him shooting her in the face.
Yeah.
I didn't understand. Like, Eddie Murphy didn't really understand why she slept with him before killing him. And neither did I. I guess Eddie Murphy's that attractive that even though you're going to kill him, you may as well send him off.
That's what it is, though, isn't it? Like, a lot of this is a vanity project. Like, the fact that he kills those three guys trying to kill him with three shots.
Yeah, it was a good joke. They'd spent ages shooting at him. Then he luckily shoots the three of them. And that, you know, it's a joke. It makes sense.
But like, oh, yeah, Ed Quick, so attractive. I have to sleep with him even though I'm going to kill him anyway. And it's like, oh, come on.
It is very much this vanity project.
There is a touch to that to a lot of Eddie Murphy films, though, because he's always like the main guy who's kind of a lady killer with loads of charisma and stuff.
It's fine. But you're right. It's fine if someone else has cast you in their film because they see that in you.
Yeah.
When you cast yourself in because you see that in yourself.
But at times they try to mess with the idea that he's this cool character because he's kind of cocky and full of himself. And then when he has a go at Della Reese's character and she's willing to fight him, you think, oh, when she starts to actually beat him up and the fact that he's willing to fight dirty because he doesn't want to be humiliated, it's just this like old black woman fighting him. And you're like, he's sort of a flawed character then because he's willing to like A, fight a woman and B, fight dirty and shoots her in the toe and they have a kind of ongoing joke with that. And it's like he shows that he's not this perfect cool character, but he still wins in the end, so it's kind of
I would just put that down to the character being inconsistent rather than than having actual depth.
But it's like they almost got it. Like, Quick is confident, but he's not a nice guy, and he's a cheat, and he's like not deserving of being this having this cool reputation because he'll fight an old woman in an alley and cheat.
This film would have been better if it was still directed and written by Eddie Murphy, not necessarily starring him, but if he'd made it in the late 90s as a way of saying, do you know what, I shouldn't be doing all these stupid family films. I'm going to make the gangster movie I've wanted to make since my 20s, but with the added decade of experience of filmmaking, rather than in his 20s when everyone was telling him he could do no wrong.
Yeah.
Mm. And I think it had the potential then, had it been made by an older Eddie Murphy with more experience, trying to make a serious gangster movie or a comedy. Well, maybe not comedy, because his comedies in the 90s were terrible, but...
He could have done a kind of American gangster-style film, where it's serious and gritty and about, you know, a time period that happened. And I genuinely think, with a little help from maybe, like, if there had been a better director or he'd had other writers working with him and stuff, there could have been a really good satire of, like, you know, gangster films. And I think a lot of the stuff in the outcome we watched had a lot of potential to be better. There could have been a really tight, funny story that people would have really loved. And instead, it was kind of like a flawed comedy with, you know, boring bits and stupid tone changes. And
It was like Eddie Murphy had written some fanfic about gangsters.
A little bit. So we'd take a bit of control away from Eddie Murphy, perhaps, or let him do it later. And maybe it would help. But there was some good comedy talent and good casting in its favour. But I think we're moving to the wrapping up of the review, right, guys? I don't know what rating system we're going to use. Any suggestions?
Some sort of gangstery cliche thing? Some sort of gambling thing?
Oh, one of the things I wanted to mention, just spring back into my mind. There was a really weird bit where Eddie Murphy's under gunfire and he jumps out of the car that's shooting at him, and then he instantly springs through this glass window, like, and just dives through. It's like, why did you dive into that window? You were miles down the road.
Yep.
So odd and ridiculous. It's like he'd always wanted to dive through a glass window, so he wrote it in to do that. Like, that was the only reason it was there. So maybe gangster stuff. We'll keep it broad.
Yeah.
So, Abby, do you want to give some final thoughts?
I actually liked this quite a bit. It wasn't perfect by any means, but I laughed often enough to make me like it.
Three really good comedians in it, so, you know.
And I think that when I did laugh, I was creased as well.
It was so over the top and silly, that's the thing.
I think it helped that I didn't know much about it or too much about the people involved, really. Like, I was aware that they existed and they are famous, but I didn't have a lot of expectations in terms of what they would do, so I just took everything as it came, and I enjoyed it for that.
Fair enough. So, do you have a sort of rating idea?
Do you know how in... I don't know if you guys have seen Guys and Dolls, but in Guys and Dolls, all of the gangsters wear these amazing coloured suits, like some are in yellow with blue shirts, some are in red with black shirts, and no one has ever dressed that way. But because it's in the context that it's in, you just take it, and it's absolutely fine. And that's what this is to me. I know that it's nothing like what it should be, and it doesn't make any sense, really. But I like it anyway.
Fair enough. It's good, even if Jamie didn't enjoy it, bringing it to us. At least it found one person who liked it a bit. Anthony, what do you think?
I didn't hate it, but I'm nowhere near a fan of it as Abby is. I think there are certainly some tonal and pacing problems throughout the whole film, and it did smack of being a bit too long. When the comedy was good, like Abby was saying, it was really good.
Mm.
But that it didn't happen often enough for me. and the whole thing just seemed like a bit of a mess. Like, I was going into it thinking, like, this should have been, like, an all-out parody comedy, but then seeing some of it, it's like, actually, the themes and some of the tone, this could have been, like, a really serious film about Harlem gangsters.
Yeah.
And you always have to give a bit of leeway with films, because they're always going to adopt the language of today and put it into the language of the past. And mostly, it worked, I think. But there were definitely some moments where it kind of takes you out a bit from being a bit too modern. Like, the improvising, I think, was really good. It it built up the characters and it made them all interesting and funny and that. But again, there were moments where it just felt like people were stumbling over their lines.
Yeah, maybe.
And like I said before, like it seems like Murphy is really good at directing the people rather than the story and the plot. And
he outreached himself a bit, didn't he?
Yeah, it's a really weird one because it did become a heist film at the end. And I suppose the thing about heist films is they have to be clever.
Sort of, yeah.
And this one really wasn't.
It was one of those stupid heist films where if you think about the plan, it makes no sense. It's good that it worked out the way it did for the film, but there's no way you plan it this way. Like, you just have to be an idiot to come up with this idea.
Yeah. So I think it's a good attempt. And there are certainly some things to like in there. But I think overall, it's a bit of a failure.
Yeah. Have you got a rating idea?
I don't really know. I guess it's if we ever like watch gangster films, there's always like the new kid who's always really mouthy and always wants to do something, but then always ends up dying really quickly and sadly.
Yes. That's good.
I suppose that's what I think of this film.
Yeah, and Eddie Murphy almost played that character, and his mistake was to not die and to live happily ever after and get away with it. Like, if he'd have died, it might have had more credibility. But, it is kind of like that. The cocky one, who's very sure of himself, but dies to prove a point to all the other characters that that's how gangs work and, you know, crime is bad. Yeah, I get you. I'll go next, and then JB, seeing as he picked it, can have his final thoughts. I guess, I like Abby, I enjoyed it because I had a laugh watching it. And I was mainly thrown by the fact that, like, De La Reis was so against type. Like, because in my mind, she was just this woman who plays an angel in a Christian program that my mum watches. I did not expect the performance that she put in. She's in a few Christian films, and it's just like, yeah, that makes sense. That's what you do. And then she's in this, and you're like, whoa, I did not expect that. And I thought that, you know, like, you've covered a lot of the points. They were funny, improvising. There was, like, some good comedians in it that did some good stuff. I think if anyone was going to do a more serious one, Richard Pryor could have, based on this performance, done a more realistic gangster film where you go, oh, I didn't know Richard Pryor could be so serious. And he was charming and funny, but he wasn't overplaying it like it was some kind of ridiculous comedy, whereas Eddie Murphy was just, you know, the opposite, just really silly and ridiculous and, you know, I don't know. It was a mess, but it was funny enough to let me think of it as being all right. I wouldn't, like, say it was the worst film like ever or anything, so...
It's like a big pile of sick on the floor that you trip over, but find the funny side once you're on the floor.
Disgusted. But it was funny, so that's... Like, when a comedy's funny, you got to let off a lot of the other problems, I think. Because so many comedies aren't funny. Like, it's just sad. So, you know, if you laugh during a comedy, tick, job done. But it was a bad... You know, it was a bad story in a sense. If it's anything gangstery, I'd say it's kind of like Bugsy Malone, where it's like loads of children trying to do a gangster story. And obviously that's, a kind of fun satire of gangster films. But it is that idea of children trying to do something that they can't. And Eddie Murphy is kind of in the same position. He's a rookie first-time director, writer, you know, he did everything, and he couldn't do it because he seemed like a child pretending to be a man. And I don't like Bugsy Malone that much. Like, it's got funny bits and it's stupid, but I find it kind of irritating. And there are elements of this where I'm like, oh, did you have to spoil it? There was one joke, oh, what was it, that really, like, I did not find funny at all. Oh, it's going to wreck me. I've got to remember it.
I don't know if it's the same one, but there was a point where Eddie Murphy was coming to see, was it Tommy? The guy who got murdered?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, like, he's walking into the room, and it's, like, really tense and really slow, and he's like, Tommy, where are you? Are you in here? And, like, it's, like, cut to reveal of dead body, and then it's, like, Eddie Murphy makes a really bad joke. Like, I'll just leave you there to think about stuff.
No, I laughed at that.
Like, really?
Yeah,
I thought it was just a bit of an anticlimax.
It was an anticlimax, but that's what made it a joke that worked. I don't know.
It's like that. I think that was a moment where it should have been a bit more serious.
Perhaps.
To give a bit of impetus to the film.
Because he gets seen coming out there, and people assume he's the one who's the murderer, and that's a good idea for a crime film. It makes sense. It gets people trying to kill you, and it did, but they played it for laughs, so they didn't have any of the tension a crime movie would have. Yeah, but, you know, it was a flawed film, but it is this Bugsy Malone type thing where it's... Do you get what I'm saying with the Bugsy Malone thing? I just don't like Bugsy Malone, and yeah. Therefore the fact that I don't like everything about this works. And it's the kind of, you know, children trying to do grown-up things. That's what I'm thinking. We've got a terrible rating system. And I always have to crowbar something awkwardly in place, but I think that works. It's the Bugsy Malone thing. Yeah?
Yeah.
Sure.
Whatever I say. So, Jamie, what do you want to wrap up with? I mean, you obviously didn't like it, but...
I didn't like it, but I didn't hate it. I think what made me react quite strong, negatively and strongly to it was the same reason it got its Razzie nominations. I was expecting more, and I was let down. But taking that element away, I just think it's... I just think it's dull, and the moments of comedy that work are just frustrating because there should be more of them. And like it was fighting for my attention towards the end, and it's messy and unfinished and doesn't like. It's like Eddie Murphy didn't quite know exactly what he was trying to make. He had a vague idea that he wanted to make a period piece and a gangster movie.
Yeah.
And he wanted his idols in it. And then when he got all that stuff in place, he didn't know what to do with any of it. So it's almost as if he could have done the scenes with himself and Richard Pryor and Red Fox first, and then cobbled the rest of the film together around the funny scenes.
Hmm. It needed more work, didn't it? A bit more help, and I think he would have got there and had something that would have been remembered, like something like Coming to America, which is a sort of funny, but it's not a spectacular film, Coming to America. But it's kind of, it works. It's funny. The concept, you get it, and you have a laugh.
It's, you know, it's like it was made by somebody who obviously really likes gangster films, but doesn't yet understand how to put a film together and how to put a genre piece together.
Yeah, you need to either commit to the satire or you need to forget about being really, really gaggy and funny and do a straight gangster film and let your own charisma make it more enjoyable.
Yeah, like, exactly.
That would have worked then, perhaps.
Yeah.
The bit that really like bugged me and wasn't funny and just spoilt moments that were good were... They had the boxer come in and be a character. And I thought he was fine as like a boxer. Oh. But they seemed to think he was hilarious that he had this stutter that meant everyone was waiting for him to finish his sentences. And it was just like, oh, it's not funny to wait for a guy to finish his sentence. Like, and they would all just sit there being like, oh, hey, this is funny. No, no, it isn't.
It's just tedious because the audience knows what he's trying to say too. Because so we're all just going, okay, come on.
Yeah, a stutter is not really... A stutter isn't funny. It's funny in real life sometimes, because you're like, this is ridiculous. Like, it's an odd thing that happens, and it's somewhat funny in a way, but it's a genuine affliction, and then it's also it's not a funny gag. Like, it's just waiting, like, around. Just awkwardly. Not funny at all. So that was the bit.
I do have a rating.
Please let us know.
Item as well. You know, you get, like, toy guns for kids.
Yes.
Like, you can imagine a toy Tommy gun. But you know, some toy guns have that little red tip on the end that makes
yeah.
you... Yeah, just to, like, make sure that everyone knows it's a toy.
And that they can't rob banks with it or something.
Yeah, that's what this is. It's like a kid's toy version of an actual thing from that period. The film is just Eddie Murphy playing, basically.
It is.
And he displays enough imagination and that he's picked up enough from watching gangster films himself. But like a kid playing Batman, he doesn't understand how to put a narrative together.
Yeah.
It's just a bunch of disparate scenes of him throwing himself around and playing with this plastic gun.
Yeah. It's Eddie Murphy plays Bugsy Malone with his friends.
Yeah.
And films it. And it's somewhat charming and funny, but still kids playing. And you need to get grown-ups to do this.
But I do genuinely think if it had been like a decade or even more, like 15 years later, and an older Eddie Murphy had like kept this idea in the back of his head since he was in his 20s and then finally decided he was going to make it, he could have ended up making something with his years of experience genuinely quite good with the basic idea. But
generally, we think it had potential, but it sort of, you know, failed a little bit. But we had a chuckle, some of us.
Do you think it's worth mentioning that did you two, Abby and Rich, did you watch it together?
We did, yeah.
Yes.
And I'm guessing me and Jamie didn't watch it with anyone else, right?
No.
It makes a difference.
Do you think that makes a difference?
I would almost say every time you watch a film, no matter what the film, if you watch it with people, it affects it. Usually, if it's a comedy, it's better. Actually, no, it happens. Yeah. It landslides either way. You either enjoy something a lot because two of you can chat about it. Like, bad films are great with other people and tedious on their own, usually, if you're just watching it. And then, like, sometimes a comedy can be more funny or just dive even. If someone else isn't enjoying and you are a little bit, you kind of both start to dislike it a lot. But if you both get on board, you kind of it definitely makes a difference. What do you think, Ab? Do you think it made a difference watching it together?
Because it sort of it helps you to reconcile the ridiculous. If you can just look at another person and go, "Is this happening?" Right?
Yeah. You both look at you. They did just do that. Okay. Yeah, it helps. I would say, generally speaking, films are either improved or, like, absolutely ruined by watching with people. And this one is improved, I would say.
Good.
So, I think that concludes our chat. And I'm now going to make one of those giant sandwiches that, like she made. She was just, like, like, the slices of bread were so thick. It was just, like, two handfuls of one sandwich. It was ridiculous. So I'm going to make one of those. And have a whole bunch of comedy banter about not having hash, but having tuna. You're so blind. Ha, ha, ha. Oh, I don't know. Anyway, guys, you can go do whatever you want. But I'm saying goodbye. Bye.
Bye.
Bye, everyone.
Yeah. You got a funny laugh, Eddie Murphy, you silly man.
No.